Chair Clark, do you want to start with
yes.
presenting your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
My bill is pretty simple, but it's an important bill. It's a bill that would invest $15 million in bond funds for public housing rehabilitation. I think we've had some testimony in this committee about how important our public housing is, especially serving a lot of our elderly and persons with disabilities throughout the whole state of Minnesota. And this $15 million appropriation, I have to tell you, is one of the most modest bills I've ever carried compared to the need. I remember that last year we had testimony and documentation.
Let me interrupt for just a second.
Yes.
I think we probably should formally start the meeting. Is that right?
Even yes, go right ahead and bang the panel.
I didn't make that announcement, so
okay.
let's start the meeting and we'll
thank
hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I knew you would do it eventually when we had enough
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
So I actually then will I guess I need to move the House file, but until we do that, I'll do it when we get a full quorum. So what this bill does is put $15 million towards what's about a $400 million need for repair of our housing throughout the state of Minnesota. It may have gone down a little bit, I'm not sure, but I'm very lucky to have with me a gentleman who's on the ground in southwestern Minnesota.
Southeastern
Metro. Sorry, I got that wrong. Anyway, we're very happy to have Mr. Wheeler with us here today, and he's going to talk a little bit more about what this would actually do and why we need it. And as you can see, the bill is pretty simple. It just provides for the bonding, and I believe, Mr. Chairman, when we move this, we'll be sending it over to Bonding Committee. So if I could ask Mr. Wheeler to provide some remarks, I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Introduce yourself for the record. And
yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Joe Wheeler, Executive Director of the Southeast Minnesota Housing Redevelopment Authority. And I want to thank you all for taking time to hear my testimony today. I'm here, to give you a little bit of background. I've actually been in this business for over 30 years. I actually have a little countdown on my iPad of when I finally will get to retirement, which I hope will happen in the next couple years. So I have been involved, and I have been involved with Minnesota NARO as well, that has helped to move this bill forward. The specific item that I've been asked to talk about is the public housing facilities bond for public housing agencies across the state. In your packet, there's a map of the state indicating where our public housings are located throughout the state of Minnesota.
I'm not sure we have that.
I don't think we have that, no.
Okay, you don't?
Okay. Maybe we can get that.
We'll make sure the members get a copy of
okay.
that.
Okay.
We have 124 agencies that manage over 20,300 units of public housing and 210 communities throughout Minnesota. These units serve low and moderate income families. The majority of our tenants are senior citizens and disabled individuals. I can kind of bring this home a little bit personal to our agency. We do not have a large amount, so when I talk about my agency specifically, we're only 110 units of public housing, but I can tell you that a majority of our residents in public housing are at 30% of the state median and or below. So we're talking about very low income families. I like to use that when I'm in front of my county boards for information, but trying to get them to imagine what it would be like to live on $800 a month income and try to meet their expenses. Our public housing facilities have been well maintained. 50% of our buildings are over 35 years old and aging. Our operating margins are not adequate to cover the cost of major rehab needs such as roof, boilers, elevators, window replacements, those types of repairs. The general obligation bond funds would be administered by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I can tell you in the last go around of the $5 million that was appropriated last year, I know we were awarded approximately $200,000, and MHFA has already met with us, and we're already underway, and we expect to have our rehab completed by the end of summer of this year. So the money is getting out the door quickly to a number of agencies across the state. While public housing assets in our communities are worth well over $2 billion, we face a backlog of capital improvements. Over the past 5 years, we have made steady progress on these projects with the award of the state bonding. As you well know, the federal government's been actually reducing our funding in capital. Again, bringing home to my organization, It's somewhere in the area of about $140,000 per year is all we get for capital improvements for 110 public housing units. So without the state assistance, we'd be in much worse repair today as without that assistance.
Let me interrupt you for just a second because we do have a quorum now. Would you like to, Representative Clark, would you like to move your bill? And
yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 528 be recommended to pass and then be referred to the Committee on Bonding.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. You may go ahead with your testimony.
Again, just to give you a little bit of background, last year the request was for 5.5, or actually the request was for nine. We were awarded 5.5 million. We had twenty total applications submitted. The request was for a little over 9 million. Total development cost with using federal funds on top of that or local match dollars, it was about $13,500,000. Non-state resources was of that amount was $4,300,000. 14 applications were from Greater Minnesota Housing, or from Greater Minnesota, sorry, and six from the metro area. Nine applications from small PHAs and 11 were from large PHAs. Again, if anybody's interested in that data, again, talking with us specifically or specifically to us, as low as $162,000 would be the low end of those grants, and the high end being about $825,000 on the GEO bonds. And with that, I would open it up for any questions that Mr. Chair or committee might have.
Are there any questions from members? Go ahead, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you so much. Can you talk a little bit about like how many employees you have and in your agency?
In our organization, we are, in fact, I just had to lay off one of my directors, another one of my directors, so we're down to two directors now in our organization because of what's been happening to us. But we have 17 full-time and four part-time. And we are total operation within the organization is about anywhere from 11 to 13 million per year is what we have for a total budget. We're larger this year because of the flood. We're doing a lot of flood work in southeast Minnesota.
Another question? Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. You had mentioned, because I guess I'm not aware of the situation as to why you had to lay somebody off. Can you speak to that just a little bit? And then also a follow-up question, do you pay anybody minimum wage, or are they all above minimum wage? Or?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wheeler.
Representative. The layoff was due to cutbacks in funding, primarily. I'm not saying that the work isn't there. The status quo, I could tell you from the last 2-3 years has been in dealing with local units of government is that government workers should be more on call 24/7, but only being paid 40 hours. So I can tell you we've tried to maximize where we can efficiencies within the organization, but we're at an impasse now. We've been trying to do more with less for the last several years, but it's gotten so less we've had to actually make some major adjustments, such as eliminating a key position or director position. So how that's absorbed is through some staffing, some myself, just do the best that we can. Can't tell you how that's doing for my home life, personal home life, because if you talk to my wife, she may have a little bit different attitude about the time that we spent trying to accomplish of serving the people that we serve. And then I'll have to ask you again.
Representative O'Neill.
Representative O'Neill of the second part of your question.
Is anyone at the minimum wage?
We start at $9 per hour in our organization, so that's our base wage.
One last follow-up.
Okay,
thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Great, thank you. So, you had said that the previous appropriation was $5.5 million.
That's correct.
And the ask here is 15, so almost three times as much. Can you speak to why almost a tripling?
The overall need of Minnesota, and I don't have that exact number in front of me, in Minnesota by itself, you're probably looking at 2 to $300 million worth of capital improvements that need to be done on public housing units across the state of Minnesota. So keeping that in mind, we know we can't bring it entirely forward in the environment that we're in, so we're doing it gradually. So that's the purpose of our request of being only $15 million rather than requesting $50 million or $100 million. And I, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe we've had this conversation with the Representative Clark, yeah. And she's kind of astounded that we haven't come in with a larger amount, but that's really the basis. The other thing is being able to get that large of amount of money out in a very short window would be another issue, whether the MHFA, you'd have to ask them whether they'd have the ability to have that capacity and then being able to get that money out there and spent in a quickly and timely fashion.
Mr. Chair, if I could just also comment.
Representative Clark.
O'Neill, you know, Mr. Wheeler's right. I actually have pushed them, like, why are we asking for so little when the need is so great? And part of the reason for that is, you know, this is such a good investment. As we let this public housing deteriorate around these older people and persons with disabilities, we can't replace it for what it would cost to repair it. And as it begins to fall apart, we're getting into big trouble. So I'm hoping that what we're doing is, you know, some this year, maybe some again in next year's Bonneville. I mean, we need to take some bigger steps. And I think if the capacity is the issue, then we need to tell our agencies they need to get themselves up to capacity, because we can't afford to replace this housing. And it's in every single one of our districts, everywhere in the state. These are really serious deterioration issues that, again, the cost of replacing the public housing that we would lose if we don't repair it is just not affordable. It's a good investment.
May I ask, Paul?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your indulgence. And do you have any statistics or facts or studies to show the return on investment repairing a very dilapidated, you know, very aging facility versus building something new? Do you have something to kind of substantiate that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, and maybe I can let Mr. Wheeler talk too. I wouldn't say that it's all very dilapidated, but it's at the point in some cases where if it's not repaired, it will get very dilapidated. So some of what we're doing is maintenance that's been delayed, deferred, and so on. But I don't know. There definitely are some probably that are somewhat dilapidated, but my sense of what I've heard from folks who have provided testimony in this past is that we're at a point right now we just got to act before it gets more run down. Maybe Mr. Wheeler would care to act a little bit more, talk a little bit more about his own housing stock and
Mr. Wheeler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, we were semi-lucky in the earlier years before HUD changed their formula, and we actually had, in the earlier years, up to $2 million to do capital improvements on 110 units. So in our particular case, it's not as huge of an issue as it is with other housing authorities that have much higher needs and weren't on that. I called it the gravy train back in those days, because once you were on that train, you kept getting those dollars. It didn't happen all one year, but over a period of like 4 or 5 years. What's been happening to us because of the cuts is we've been deferring the maintenance side, and which is starting to affect some major structural parts of the building, such as the windows and roofs and those types of things. I know in our case, the last two times that we utilized the state money, it was for replacing a roof. And if you saw the roofs, where the roof shingles curling up, those types of things, and I'm sure you're all aware that that's one of the major components of the building. You don't want that to start leaking, because it causes many other issues. We also get into housing development, and I can't begin to tell you how many times we've had to shelf a couple projects because the costs are just so high, and without having a lot of creativity to try to pull together even a market rate project in outstate Minnesota, it's getting to the point of almost being possible to do without a lot of taxing authority being done on the local level through an HRA levy, for example, to underwrite some of those costs. So I hope that answers your question.
And I just can have one last question.
And go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. I appreciate your indulgence. Do you have a list of properties or projects that you'd like to do, or is this more of a granting? How are you prioritizing them? Do you have a list and a spreadsheet or anything for us to look at as to what you would do with the $15 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative
O'Neill,
I can provide. I do have a copy of projects that were needed that was based on 2012. So an example, when I told you for South St. Paul, for example, I think $2.4 million was their estimated cost, and they received, I got that here someplace, $454,000. So I've got some numbers here I can share of what the needs were when of the requests that came into Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and what they actually funded. And then this was just on this current request. It doesn't include all the capital needs of all the public housing projects throughout the state, just for the ones, the 20 that submitted applications to the state. So this may be helpful information. The only other thing I'd like to point out is this would not include now the 2013 capital needs. So each year we always have additional capital needs, because we have 20-year capital needs assessments done on all of our properties.
Mr. Wheeler, is that information you could get to Representative Clark, and then she could disseminate to us? I just wanted to let you know the map that you referred to, I believe, has been handed out. Did you want to clarify anything about the map or say anything?
Mr. Chair, that just identified where the public housing units are located throughout the state of Minnesota.
Representative Mariani.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wheeler, is that correct?
Wheeler, yes.
Wheeler, okay. Mr. Wheeler, I'm relieved to hear that you're not paying your employees minimum wage. You know, several years ago, I co-chaired a legislative commission on poverty, and what we quantified and learned is that minimum wage is not a living wage. Minimum wage just simply means that I'm subsidizing someone else's income. And, you know, living wage is probably closer to $10-$11 an hour. So you're not even quite there yet, but I'm glad you're not doing minimum wage. actually, my main question was answered when you were responding to Representative O'Neill about the backlog. And so, Representative Clark, so it's a $200 million backlog, sounds like, across the state. And I note that in 2010, this legislature appropriated $10 million for these bond projects. And those were line item vetoed by Governor Pawlenty. And I think it's really important, members, to know that with a $200 million backlog, this legislature stepped up at least a little bit, but the executive branch decided to apparently not to honor that at all. So I have two questions for you, Representative Clark. One is, because I want to make sure I have these numbers right, was there anything else that was appropriated that year for these bonds, or was that the total of what we had issued, the vetoed amount of $10 million?
Yep, Mr. Chair, I'm remembering what we did last year, which was $5 million in bonds for public housing. I think maybe it's 5.5.
5.5.
And $30 million for the rest of the bonding for housing. But that 5.5 last year was really against a need of $400 million. I don't know exactly what the total need is right now. I'm hearing between $200 and $300 million. I guess that would be helpful if we actually had an update on that. But because there has been some, you know, there was use, certainly very good use made of the bonding last year. And I know that every time there is public dollars that go into a project, there's other dollars that come in from the local governments and so on, so they make it stretch. So that the dollars that, for example, went to your project, I'm sure you had to match that with some other dollars. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, Representative Clark. The project actually moving forward will be about a $350,000 project, because we're using capital funds, HUD capital funds, along with the state funds.
So I hope that's helpful. I appreciate your questioning, because it is an issue of the need versus what it's actually being appropriated. This is a very modest proposal. I wish it were for more, and maybe it will be if we get lucky.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, at least the few numbers I have before me are a little disturbing for me, for this legislator anyway, considering the need. It looks like the year before we appropriated $2 million. And so over the last 3 years, we managed to appropriate $17 million, which is about an average of $4.2 million a year. But we lost $10 million of that. due to the action of the executive branch. So, Representative Clark, what kind of sense do you have in terms of the executive branch this year relative to this request?
President Clark.
Well, Mr. Chair, I believe the governor has put some additional dollars in, and, you know, I think the legislature may go a little better. I'm hoping it will. We did have a report from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on the overall governor's budget on what could be offered there, and I think, you know, I'm hopeful if we get this bill over to the bonding committee. I've had numerous conversations with Representative Hausman. She knows that $400 million figure of real need. We've talked about it numerous times. But a good investment would be to do more than just a small part. But we're starting with this, and I agree with you that it's very minimal. And what worries me, I guess, really is as the housing is not repaired, it can get worse. You know, you talk about leaky roof. You know, if you don't take care of a leaky roof, you may end up with a lot more costs in your housing. And many of us who probably toured or some of us who visit our own public housing facilities know what this means, probably in a real sense. I've walked into rooms where there's been deterioration and, you know, people are living in some situations that just really should be repaired immediately. I talked with one veteran one day who his wheelchair, was wheelchair-bound, and he had had some damage to his facility. He had a hard time getting around in his own apartment because of the lack of some repair there in his wheelchair. So, I mean, there's many things that can happen. Major systems, you know, the heating, cooling, roofs, all windows, all of those things. But I'm confident that at least if we do this bond sale, we will move forward and hopefully can do more.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, Mr. Wheeler, I was struck by your testimony earlier that you know, we're talking about rentals for very low-income people. And I have one of my close friends is a developer here in St. Paul, and he does market rate work. He's a smart guy, so you know, he builds into, you know, his economic model the ability to over time accumulate you know, resources to do the inevitable repairs. Everything wears out. As my wife continues to remind me, on my roof right now, but it's logical to me that, you know, with the market that we're attempting to serve here, the ability to accumulate those kind of reserves are pretty minimal. Representative Clark, one last question. Is this so that this would involve also public, federal public housing units? So, does this sort of repair it or lose it thing happen potentially with? Am I getting this right that if we're not maintaining federally subsidized units, that we'll lose them? So this isn't just about building new ones. It's about this mandate, I suppose, that the federal government says, and I suppose it's wise, you know, they made the initial investment and they want to make sure that states aren't going to run those down. So is that what we're talking about here partly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Clark. Thank you for that question, Representative Mariani. Yeah, if we lose the subsidy for these, they're not probably going to be replaced.
Oh. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Isaacson. Okay. Any other questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Would you like to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion that House Bill 528 be passed and be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment.
I'm sorry, where is it?
To the Bonding Committee, Committee on Capital Investment.
President Clark renews her motion to pass and refer this bill to the Capital Investments Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Representative Green, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have, and I would like to move them.
Thank you very much. Representative Green moves the minutes. All those in favor, minutes as they're presented, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Is there any other business?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a reason.
Okay, all right, very good. Kevin Wally.
No.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay, all right. I believe we have a presentation on the potential impacts of federal sequestration on Minnesota housing initiatives and programs from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Thank you. And would you introduce yourselves for the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tanya Orm with the Housing Finance Agency, and with me is Katie DePinka. And we have been asked to share with you what information we have about the impacts of the potential, seems inevitable, sequestration at the federal level. So I have a couple of sort of broad comments, and then we will try and talk with you about as many of the specifics as we have, but I have to warn you that we don't have a lot of detailed information. The sequestration is expected to result in cuts to the federal government budget of a total of $85 billion. This will result in real cuts with real consequences for regular people. No state, including Minnesota, is going to be able to manage these federal cuts away. They will take place, and we will see impacts on everyday life. We still are hopeful that Congress will eventually come up with a long-term solution, and that this sort of era of uncertainty will end soon. It has caused problems both in putting together a state budget and for you all going forward in putting together your state budget. So part of what the governor has done to try and deal with this uncertainty is to at least address what he can, which is to try and develop a balanced state budget going forward. We expect that Minnesota's job growth could be impacted by as many as 5,000 jobs going forward by these federal cuts, and that the unemployment rate will be pushed up by about 0.2% by the end of the year. And similarly, growth in Minnesota's personal income will be slowed by about 0.2%. One of the uncertainties is the timing of the reductions. I won't go into the details of the federal the housing situation, but there are lots of moving parts, and so we can't say that everything's going to happen on March 1st, that we'll see the effects on March 1st or even on March 26th. So we're all waiting for further information from OMB and from the individual federal agencies. The other thing that I'd like to point out is, in contrast to the federal government that's doing across-the-board cuts, that's not something that Governor Dayton has chosen to do with his budget recommendations. So he's trying to be much more targeted in the way that he deals with budget deficits. There are a number of federal programs, housing programs, that the state benefits from, not all of which, and in fact many of which, do not flow through the state agencies. But I'm just going to talk really briefly about what those major programs are, and then I'm going to turn it over to Katie to tell us specifics about it. Two of the biggest programs are through the Section 8 program. One is a project-based assistance that is money that flows through the state agency to actual buildings that provides assistance to reduce the rents that the tenants pay. And the other is the Section 8 voucher program. So between those two programs, we have about 60,000 units of housing. About 30,000 in the project-based assistance and another 30,000 in vouchers and certificates. The Section 8 program, like public housing, provides that the tenants pay 30% of their income towards their rent, and the federal government picks up the difference. Public housing is another major program that will be impacted by this sequestration, and public housing provides another about 23,000 units in Minnesota. And it's both an operating, the federal government provides money both for operating and, as you heard, for capital needs. The home program is a block grant program that the current appropriation is about $6 million to the state. There are also entitlements jurisdictions that receive home dollars, so Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hennepin County, St. Cloud, Duluth. The Housing Finance Agency has chosen to use the home money for down payment assistance and for the help with preservation of federally assisted housing. The McKinney-Vento or Hearth Act provides money for homelessness programs, a variety of one. This is money, again, that does not flow through this state agency, but does provide money at the local level. The state receives about $20 million altogether. And HOPWA, which is the Housing Opportunities for Persons with AID, is another program that, as it is just as the title would suggest, it provides some rental assistance for persons with AID. And the state agency in Minneapolis are the two recipients of that. And finally, the CDBG program, or the Community Development Block Grant Program, is a combination, again, of money that flows through a state agency and money that goes to local units of government. CDBG is the Department of Employment and Economic Development, DEED, receives this, the state's share of the CDBG money. And it is used for a combination of housing and other community development needs. And then Katie's going to talk about the specifics.
Right. Thank you. Again, I'm Katie Topinka with the Housing Finance Agency. And as Tanya mentioned, we haven't heard a lot of specifics from HUD at this point, particularly about what sequestration will mean for us in Minnesota. But they have said some things nationally about what it will mean, that it could mean that 125,000 individuals or family could lose assistance offered through Section 8, the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and that would put people at risk of becoming homeless. Those are the low-income people that we're talking about who are served by that program. It could also mean that, or could cause more than 100,000 formerly homeless Americans, including veterans, to be removed from their current residence or emergency housing program. And much of that will be done because of cuts to the continuum of care programs that Tanya had mentioned. And lastly, HUD has said that cuts could result in 75,000 fewer households receiving foreclosure prevention aid and counseling. And in Minnesota, some of the estimates are that 1,600 families would be cut from the Section 8 voucher program, and that public housing could see $3.8 million in cuts this year, $1.4 million in cuts to homeless programs, $700,000 to home, and $60,000 to HOPWA. So those are some of the specific estimates we've seen for Minnesota. Because some of the Section 8 project-based developments have contracts, they have funds that are already committed into the future, so it's difficult to estimate what the impact on the Section 8 project-based portfolio, which the agency administers, what that impact would be immediately because some of those funds have already been committed. But one of the concerns we have is that HUD may be forced to furlough some staff, and that raises concerns about the timely processing of payments from HUD to the state for those project-based Section 8 developments, and that could result in owners not receiving the assistance they need in order to make mortgage payments on those properties. And then with respect to home, which, as Tanya mentioned, home is used for down payment assistance as well as for preservation of federally assisted rental housing, the fiscal year 2013 appropriation is not finalized. Congress is operating on a continuing resolution through the end of March. So the cuts there may be simply reflected in that final appropriation for fiscal year 2013. So that remains to be seen. So that's kind of a summary of what we're hearing, what this may mean for Minnesota. You know, we know that all these state agencies are assessing the possible impacts and reporting to MMB. MMB will be meeting with state agencies this week to talk through what some of these impacts mean. But currently, there's not a plan to supplant federal spending with state dollars. So with that, I will take any questions.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do either of you have the numbers as to what the $85 billion is as a percentage of the federal budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, it's approximately 5%. It sort of averages out to be 5% of, I believe, of discretionary non-defense spending.
Mr. Chair, the total budget? Yeah, what is it of the total budget?
Representative Green, I don't believe I have that.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Do you have a breakdown? I'm coming across here like I'm trying to hammer you. I'm not. I just want this information. Do you have a breakdown of what Minnesota's total share of the $85 billion would be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, we have seen some very preliminary estimates that our share would be $85 million, but I can tell you from what we've seen, how they calculated the housing portion, it did not count some major programs. So I would say we don't actually have a good number for you at this point. And that's part of the reason that MMB is getting people together on Friday to try and gather some more information so we can have a better estimate.
Okay.
Rosa Green?
Mr. Chair, and Madam, now you had estimate 5,000 jobs lost. If you don't have the numbers, where did you come up with the 5,000 jobs lost?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, this was information that MMB put together, and I would have to defer to them.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, the numbers you gave us, I assume that's a total cumulative effect and it wouldn't all happen at once. Is that correct?
Ms. Orr. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we believe that it won't happen all at once. That's part of the difficulty in sort of figuring out the impact. But we don't have any we don't have any specifics at this point.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
When I was home last weekend, stopped into my, well, it's the USDA office, and of course it was a topic of conversation there as well. And that's a relatively small office. I think there's probably a staff of 4 or 5 people, is it? But they were looking at a 5% cut, and we're going to handle it by having each employee take one furlough day a month for the rest of their fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And they didn't think it would really, I mean, they weren't going to shut the office down. So, I mean, checks would go out, things like that. And I hope that'd be the case with what you're talking about, too, that you'd spread these furloughs out to keep the offices functioning if this were to happen. So are there plans to do that, to spread these out, to keep the basic functions going?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, one of the things I need to point out is that for the Housing Finance Agency, the federal money that we receive all goes to programs. None of it goes to support the staff. So, and similarly, none of the state appropriations that we hope that you will approve this year will go for staffing. It is all used for programs. So furloughing staff does not help in terms of absorbing the program costs. The largest portion of the federal money that the Housing Finance Agency receives is about $170 million a year for Section 8 project-based assistance. That is money that we administer mostly on behalf of HUD that flows to owners of affordable housing so that they can make their mortgage payments. It's not money that gets used to support agency staff. And that is an example of the effect of the sequestration will be felt over time, and not initially, because as Ms. Topinka described, there are some contracts, so some developments already have money committed to them. But I can't emphasize enough the fact that with respect to the Housing Finance Agency, this money is not being used for staffing purposes, and so furloughs will not help with that.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again for that clarification, Mr. Chair, as well. So the 5,000 jobs lost that you mentioned, where would those job losses occur?
Ms. Orr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, this is as a result of the economist's forecast about the impact of the loss of federal money to the state. So it's across the board. So it's to businesses that provide, I'm making this up, provide paper to the federal government. There's going to be less money spent. It's that sort of thing. It's not state government jobs or federal government jobs.
Okay. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Wondering if you have some of these facts you were just listing, the 16,000 families. Do you have a document that we could take a look at? I was trying to write it all down, but I didn't write it down as fast as you were saying it.
We'd be happy to provide you with that.
That would be helpful.
Thank you.
And Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that would be helpful. I appreciate it. I'm trying to get a handle of similar impacts across the board, particularly in the education area, where I chair one of the committees. Ms. Orr, so the 5% that we're talking about here, that's not 5% across an entire year's budget, is it?
Isn't it
just what's remaining in the annual budget? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, it is very confusing.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that in fact the 5% is for the amount remaining after the continuing resolution that the Budget Cut Act that Congress adopted in early January, there will be 5% cuts to the remaining amount in the fiscal year. But then there's also, as part of the budget that Congress adopted in January, there are additional cuts. So it's there like two sequence. There's sort of two different times when we'll see cuts.
Yeah. Well, and Mr. Chair, we're accustomed here, of course, to deal in biennial blocks, and so we can do apples to apples in terms of what 5% would mean to any of our appropriations. I don't want to venture too far out here, but I'm thinking that 5% of what's left might be a pretty big cut relative mm-hmm. to a year's, if you were to prorate it, across a year. So, and Ms. Orr, and we're also kind of venturing now more into federal congressional policy here, but, the other specter that's hanging out there is a potential government shutdown on May 1st, I believe. At that point, it seems to me that this whole issue of sequestration really kind of becomes moot because everything shuts down. And I don't think you can fix the sequestration issue at that point. You don't need to venture with me. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, that this issue may not prove to be a simple, quote-unquote, issue of the current sequestration that's going to occur on Friday, that there may be a compounding impact here and perhaps even an inability on the part of the federal government to, quote-unquote, fix the sequestration if we're in government shutdown. And I'm not trying to, be the doom speller here, Mr. Chair, but I'm awfully worried, as a state legislator, whose responsibility is to make sure our budgets are balanced, in fact, constitutionally required to do so while we're trying to meet the needs of the people to the best extent that we can, that I'm just really afraid that I may not be able to do that. And not only that, but I may not be able to plan effectively for it. I do have a question, though. So and you talked about the contracts, and of course those are legally enforceable, et cetera. It does seem to me, though, that with sequestration looming and the uncertainty related to that, that one of the things that your agency can't do, or it probably shouldn't do responsibly, is to enter into new contracts. So maybe you can speak and clarify that for me. I mean, obviously, you know, I think you're kind of on a rolling, you know, cycle based on appropriations, resources available, et cetera, to be able to enter into contractual, obligations to meet the people's needs based on the appropriations before you. But if I were managing, I would manage pretty conservatively, and say, look, I think we're going to have to, you know, put a freeze on any prospective contracts coming forward. So maybe you can share some thoughts relative to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, clearly with the home program, where we don't know how much money we will get, we would make contingent awards of money, but wouldn't enter into contracts until we knew exactly how much money we had. So because housing takes a while to develop, we want to at least start things going, but we would not, as I said, we would not enter into contracts until we knew exactly how much money we was available to commit. With respect to the Section 8 program, the project-based Section 8, which is the largest pot of money, those contracts are between the federal government and the owner of the property, and those contracts have already been entered into. So we're not a party to those. We simply administer the money.
Well, Mr. Chair, obviously the kind of the whole instability of sequestration, you know, regardless of, you know, what we might feel, you know, partisanly about whether it's a wise thing or not, it's pretty clear objectively that it creates a pretty unstable environment. And I would hate to be here in special session trying to fix something that was not caused by us as state legislators. Ms. Sawyer, just one final quick thing. You know, we obviously have been focusing on trying to get a handle on federal policy or lack of policy. But, you know, frankly, what strikes me, you know, are things like hearing that, McKinney-Ventel, early this year, Representative Clark had informational hearings, and it was shared by the MHFA commissioner that one of the areas that the department is looking to, be more proactive in is working with homeless youth, for instance. And we apparently, as a state, you know, have done pretty good work, relatively speaking, to dealing with chronic homeless issues, but we have lots of young people out there that are on the streets. I think that's what McKinney-Vento addresses. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to venture into the economic arguments here and the policy arguments, but at the end of the day, it's whether a 16-year-old has a place to hang out safely. In Minnesota, I'm really afraid that that's about to get worse.
Ms. Orr, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, all I can do is reiterate that the estimates are that there'll be about 1,600. The cuts will be about over $1 million to the homeless programs, and that translates to a fair number of households who won't get assistance.
Okay. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the testifiers, you were just mentioned once again the $1 million figure. Now, is that money that just comes straight to the state, or is that also going to different agencies across, or different nonprofits or other organizations throughout the state providing support services to the homeless youth, or homelessness?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fisher, actually most of the money does not go to the state. A small amount of emergency shelter grant money goes through the Department of Human Services, but most of the money goes to local nonprofits.
Okay. and where I was just kind of picking up on a little bit, going back to the question that Representative Anderson picked up earlier, is there's a lot of nonprofits that are getting notices right now of what they're going to be having in cutbacks, because there's a lot of state federal grants that come out. And Representative Mariani alluded to one of them. There's a Runaway Homeless Youth Act, and there's a number of agencies in the state, and they're all getting notices right now, and they're scrambling to figure out what that means. And basically, in some instances, it means that there's going to be less youth that we're going to be able to provide help for as we go forward. And it's a disturbing situation, and it's real frustrating when we're trying to make inroads here, and at the same time, we're losing ground from the federal level. So just want to kind of, and that kind of comes back to the jobs thing. When you say where jobs are losing, you know, some of the people providing services may end up, you know, having to lay off people or reduce what is being done. So I think that's where some of those numbers are coming from that you're hearing.
Representative Hertaugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question relates to a statement you made early in your presentation. I made a note here. You said growth has been slowed by 22%. Could you comment what was the base of that percentage? Is that based on what percent of growth that it's been slowed by 22%?
I think you didn't quite hear what she said, but go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I may have not articulated as well as I should have. In fact, the estimates are that as a result of the cuts, that the expected growth in personal income in Minnesota will slow by 0.2%.
0.2%.
0.2%.
And what was that projected rate of growth?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that in front of me. I'd be happy to get it to you.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any announcements?
Yes, about the trip, we will not have committee on Monday, as you know. We will be. You'll get an email from me by the end of today about the trip. We will be meeting at the turnaround between the Department of Transportation and the State Office Building. We'll be meeting at 11:15. Okay, just so everyone knows, you'll send an email with the details, but I just wanted to get that on your radar. So please send me a confirmation email to let me know once I send it to you.
Mr. Chairman?
Is lunch included?
If it's if the chair gives me the green light on that.
Yes, we got the green light. I think the only thing, if you'd please RSVP so we know how much to order, and I think we'll probably do sandwiches and a couple of different choices. Does that sound okay?
I was just joking, but that sounds great.
Yeah, we want you to be able to get in the bus in time, not miss it because lunch. We're not going to send you back hungry. We want you to feel happy about going on this trip. Actually, happy isn't quite weird. We want you to feel filled up enough so that you can pay attention, put it that way, because it's going to be, actually, we're going to see some things that are really good to see and some of the challenges that we need to see, too. So, combination.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Are there any other comments or announcements? Without any other business, I guess, we'll consider the committee adjourned.